Okay, good morning. We start the lecture a little bit late today. So before we start the chapter 3 in our textbook about legal and ethical issues, any people ever did your homework? Or it is optional, but if you have already done it, just send it to me by midnight today. After that, I will not consider into this top 3 free lunch next week. About the course paper, as I mentioned, if you are confident of this homework to convert it to your one of your course paper, you may think about seriously how to make it correct in formats and also very good in the content structure. And here I can share you with you some in this folder, LaTeX, with some sample papers. I already got permission from last year's students, 2 or 3 of them, and there were 4 sample papers. Just for your reference, how a paper can be written in a very good shape. All of these papers are either A grade or B grade, so could be very good sample. For example, here, if we click, these 4 papers are corresponding to the 4 aspects as I mentioned in the intro course, namely the legal, ethical aspects, the first aspects, and the technical aspects, second one, organizational aspects, third one, and the culture aspects. So in total 4. If we take a look at the first one, for example, this is a ethical and legal aspect of global internet surveillance projects. So it is a specific project. And first take a look at the format. It is a EEE format, which I already attached the template, both the LaTeX one and the Microsoft Word one for you in the same folder. And then we take a look at the structure of the content. First part abstract, several sentences. It gives the main motivation and the result of your work. And the introduction part, just give a general description, the motivation and what type of method you used and what type of conclusion you reached. And the second part is very important. We call it the state of art. You include the state of art means how other people are doing, dealing with such cases. So basically other people's work. And occasionally you can insert your comments, whether this approach is good or bad, and give your reasons. The third part we call the discussion. So you can go to depth to give your either it's an insight founded by you or your own opinions, and conclude by the last section conclusion with a list of reference. Pay attention to the format. Okay, this is just information about this paper. Any question about this course paper? You can raise your hand. We can answer. No, so no questions. So I assume every people know how to format your paper and how to structure your paper in order to get a good grade. Okay. Yes. No. It's optional, but recommended, because academic people, we use a lot of that, writing our technical report or academic paper. Any other question? Okay, then we switch to our lecture today. Yes, if you take a look at this book, chapter 3 about the legal and the ethical issues and also the professional organizations. I didn't include this part in my lecture slides, but you can find the relevant information in the set of slides provided by the textbook. And also, please go through the details of this book about this professional organization part. For example, the book mentioned several organizations. The first one is ACM. Association of Computing Machinery. So it is very, say, professional association for computer scientists in the world. And I really like one of the publication from ACM, that is the Communications of ACM. It is a monthly journal with a lot of thought-provoking and very inspiring ideas in every issue. And also in every issue, in every month, you can find some articles relevant to information security, which is basically not very technical ones, but very thought-provoking. So I really recommend it. I believe you can find it from our library or from our online ACM digital library. And NTNU is a registered user there. So if you access the campus network, you can always access all the resources from the library. Another one called the ISSA, Information Systems Security Association, and another one, Sense Institute. If you Google it, you can find a lot of guidelines, best practice, technical report issued from this association about information security. And the other ones, like governmental ones. In US, we have NSA. Every people knows that, right? Any people know the Norwegian version? NSM, yeah. And I think I have some website then. Yes. NSM, you can find their website there. In US, they called, anyone know this? Okay, Computer Emergency Response Team. So basically, organizations, they should have some team like this to protect the information infrastructure. And on each level, different level. On the national level, they have US CERT. And in Norway, we have also NOR CERT. Yeah, that is this one. Yes, that is about the professional organizations. We will not go to details in this 2 hours lecture, so we will focus on some basic concept. For example, liability. What is due care? What is due diligence? Policy and law, what is the difference between the two? And what is privacy? a lot of people ask, what is privacy? This is a really difficult question, and there's no standard answer. I will show you some examples. Ethics. What is the relevance of ethics in cyber and information security? And we go quickly go through some US and EU laws about information security. We may don't have time to go to the details of the Norwegian laws, but I attached a set of slides which was actually prepared by Niels Svensson, who gave this course before last year. So the first concept term we need to be familiar with is liability. We can find this definition from our textbook. It's a definition for law, regulations. A lot of people feel it's quite boring to read it. But however, we need to understand the implementation and the meaning of this term. So namely, it is a legal obligation of an entity extending beyond criminal or contract law. Includes legal obligation to make a restitution. So two key points. The first one, it is obligation, so you have to respect it. And it is extending beyond criminal law and contract law. That means in addition, if you're running a business with others, you provide the security services for another company, you sign contract with them, so you conform to the contract law. You also should not break the criminal law, definitely. But in addition to these two basic requirements, you may also be subject to some degree of liability. So what is liability? It is you need to take the responsibility and make compensations for some wrongdoings, either by on the top management level of the company, of your organization, or the employees. So the second element, key points is you are always to be prepared to make some compensations for your customer to some degree. And I share with you a case, real case, to help you to understand liability, this term. Anyone know this? No? Okay. So VTech is a manufacturer of kids' toy, and this type of toy are containing some electronics inside. For example, to be encrypted with some basic video communication or audio communication functionalities in the small toys. So it is prepared for the young kids to learn how to use this ICT tools to prepare their life for the future. There's a customer data breach incident happened late last year. One day in November last year, a journalist was contacted by the hacker who has broken into the company's server containing customer data breaches, a lot of customer data. And it was actually very surprising to the hacker, and the hacker was astonished to realize basically there's no security controls was deployed to protect their server. So namely, there's no basic SSL or TLS encryption channel to secure the data transmit from the device to the company server. It's very, very unprofessional. And the password, yes, they have some account name and password, but not in a hashed form or sorted form as we shortly discussed in last week's course. Also, it is very easy to launch a SQL injection attack, which is a software-based attack on the server's database. It's very surprising because they are big companies, and the consequence is 4.8 million of parents and 6.3 million of kids profile leaked. And in this case, it's very typical. So I use this example here. We call the situation using one term. So gross negligence or grossly negligent. So what is the relevance to liability? So basically we can see if you are CISO of this company, you are in charge of this information security responsibilities, we say if you have this gross negligence, then you have serious liability. So higher is the degree of the gross negligence, higher is the liability with the organization. This applies to most of the cases. Then the question is how to, I think most of the business, they want more money, right? Want more income and benefits or profits for the company, and they want to avoid as much as they can the liability responsibility. So this is normal. It's hard to criticize because they are company, they are private industry. And the key point is what is the proper way to control the reliability and to reduce the reliability. I believe this is the key question. Any people have any idea on this? Yes? Questions for who? For the end user or for, let's say, the employee of the organizations? Both, yes. Interesting answer. Let's take a look at the first possibility. That is the caution to the employee part. We call it, we have the two special terms to describe this. Due care and the due diligence. So what is due care? That is, if you are CISO or CIO of this company, you should be always in much, much long time in advance. Before you release your product, you should be always prepared psychologically or and also technically for information security. So be always anticipating some security leakage and always be prepared to enhance your security policies and update your security controls. That is we call the due care. That means make information security or cybersecurity know to each of your employee and make them aware of this. So that is we call the due care. And due diligence, so awareness is not enough. Occasionally, we should enhance this awareness by frequent training, for example, and well maintenance to the system, for example. That is we call the due diligence. So make it well maintained to our best. So if you have this to work down or well planned and also down, then even you have a security breach, I think you have much less liability in the legal sense. And of course, no company, no person can avoid security breach, right? We say there's no 100% security in this world. But the only thing we can do our best is to try our best to do this two type of work, due care and due diligence. And can you guess what happened to this VT case, how they did to realize due care or due diligence, or do you think they can do anything else? The answer is they were very smart. They use another way to circumvent this two part, due care and due diligence. So in the next month, so the data breach happened in November. In December, they quietly and quickly update their customer terms and the conditions, we say T and C. And I copied one sentence from the real T and C provided by this company. You can easily access this. It is open to every people to access. So they say in the item 7, you here, of course, meaning the customers, acknowledge and agree that you assume full responsibility for your use of the site and any software or firmware downloaded therefrom. You acknowledge and agree that any information you send or receive during your use of the site may not be secure and may be intercepted. Very smart, huh? So they completely shifted the responsibility, a liability to the user and the user. Of course, you can imagine they received a bunch of tons of criticism after this incident, after they released, updated their TNC. However, they have the good reasons. A spokesman from them, they say, they told the BBC, but no company that operates online can provide 100% guarantee that it won't be hacked. True. And the Learning Lodge, here it is the name of the product affected in the data breach incident. Term and conditions like the TNC for many online sites and services simply recognize that the fact by limiting the company's liability for acts or third parties such as hackers. Such limitations are commonplace on the web. Actually, this state of the truth. Any question? Very good question. Let's if we talk about the legal, if it is legal, then we may want to differentiate what type of laws, what type of regulations might suit this case, right? Then let's take a look at one opinion. That's the lower part from the Heather Roberts. She is a legal expert, but only in the field of consumer law. She think, despite the understandable backlash, unfortunately, from a legal perspective, you see, the company is acting entirely within the restriction of consumer law and is entitled to amend their terms and conditions as they want. So we have this question. Was the company really acting within the legal restriction? And or they just need to be blamed. They are to blame on the level of responsibility of social morality, for example. Actually, we have different opinion from another legal expert. And this time, it is not from the consumer law. Answer your question. It is a privacy law. A lawyer from the Netherlands. He said, under the EU law, you have an obligation to secure data, and you cannot waive this by putting something like this in the terms and the conditions that you have with your customers. So you see, different people actually have different opinions. But I would say in most cases, I will agree with this opinion. So the fundal, actually, if we go to the essential part, the essential question, or say here, we call the fundamental question is, can a customer consent, or in general, a person-to-person or person-to-company agreement override a national law? Right? This is the essential question. And we found that this is hard to answer because there's no standard answers. It depends on which country, which area you are located. But I would say in most of the countries, US and Europe, the answer could mostly be no. The personal consent or personal agreement, they cannot override the national law. We have some grounds from the newly established EU General Data Protection Regulation, we call the GDPR, which was actually enacted or made April this year, will be taken into effect from May 2018, so in 2 years. Every EU member states, they have to conform to this law. Conform means this is a basic law for all the EU member states. And based on this law, you can even make an even stricter law in your local country. So it says the GDPR also allows the member states to enact laws that restrict the processing of some categories of data, even if the data subject explicitly consents. So you see, we found the ground here. Okay, this is a very typical case I shared with you, the Witte case, about the personal consent, personal agreement, and the national law. Any questions about this case? If not, we go to other terms, concepts like policy and the law. We can find some definitions from our textbook. What is policy? Policies are expectations that define acceptable and unacceptable behaviors in a workplace. So basically, it's set of rules. If you are employee of my organizations, you should conform, respect this policies. So you can regard it as a law within a organization. And it should be very carefully crafted to ensure they are complete, appropriate, fairly applied to everyone, not only to lower workers, but also to top management level. And the difference between policy and law, it is obvious. If we break the policy, security policy of a company, in most cases, you will not be put into jail because it is not a law. Then the question is how to make these organizational policies enforceable. If it is not a law, how to enforce them? Yes? Mm-hmm. Okay. So it is a type of penalty or... Yeah, I agree. Any other idea? So to be fair, there's a risk. Yes. And okay. So reward? Interesting. Yes. So we should have different level of policy and with different incentives or penalties. So in summary, our textbook gives some inspirations. Which idea, which aspects we should use? We take a care. First, for example, dissemination. This is actually the CISO or the policymaker's obligation. If you have a policy, right, you should ensure every employee knows that. If you just make a policy and lock it in your cabinet, no people know that, and then if one of the employee break the policy, you get penalty. You give penalty to him or her. This is not fair, right? So the first condition, it is dissemination. Make the policy readily available for employee by hard copy or soft copy. And then review. Make sure all the people understand each item in the policy. Yes, comprehension, understanding. Make it readable and understandable. And then you sign agreement. That is compliance aspects. Then also very important, uniform enforcement. We have this case of Hillary Clinton's email accidents. That is very typical in this case. If you have a security policy, you make sure every people respect to it, not only the low-level workers. And the penalty, yes, we need a penalty. And according to different type of conditions, the penalty could be different as well. And okay, we have another topic to learn, that is the types of law. I think you just need to know that we have different type of laws: civil law, criminal law, private law, public law. Go to some details from the slides provided from the textbook. And before we conclude the first 1 hour, first half session, we touch the topic of privacy, which we will spend a lot of time from the second half of the lecture discuss this topic. So privacy is currently one of the hottest topics in information security fields, and our textbook calls it a state of being free of unsanctioned intrusion. So keep your personal freedom. We see a lot of challenges to privacy in a modern society, like data aggregation. Talk about the smartphone, tablets, or you have different accounts, social media, or services provided by governments, bank. You have so many information sources and leave your personal traces in so many places. And if it is possible for a hacker to aggregate them, they can make a perfect profile of this person, and this can be very risky for this person in terms of ID fraud or other aspects. Internet and social network, public surveillance, and we get more and more surveillance cameras. I don't think we have this one in this room, right? I believe we have some security cameras in the basements and in some place, some corners in this building. Internet of Things, new technologies like biometrics. A lot of people, they are very sensitive to using their face or especially iris, fingerprint as their password to replace their password because of the privacy concerns. What happened if some people steal our biometric data? Then it is not possible to replace it like a password. You can replace a password, you can refresh it every week. You cannot do this for your face, for your fingerprint. Theoretically, yes, you can make a surgery, but I don't think many people would like to do so. mHealth, eHealth, we have all of our health data connected to the same database. We have this website in Norway called HealthNorge. Any people have experience using that? Yes, great. Any, just one student or two? Okay, great, three. You see, it's not easy to persuade people to adopt new technologies because of a lot of concerns. Convenience, whether it is convenient or whether it is trustworthy services delivered. And sensing technologies. I still remember some news end of last year in a public get-together in Germany. Some political person, they make a talk there. And when they hold the microphone, a journalist holding a long shot, high-definition camera, capture a picture from this person. And if they enlarge the person so they can see clearly the fingerprint there. So this is the sensing technology. Definitely it is a threat to people's privacy as well. Personalized biomedical technologies like the fast DNA sequencing technologies. It is a good thing for medical use. On the same time, it is posing more privacy concerns. But it is interesting to know that privacy, this concept, it is actually not new. For more than 120 years ago, people already have this awareness about the privacy. At that time, this is an interesting story. There were some new technologies invented at that time. So in the year 1878, so the new technology, maybe if we use it, a word popularly used today for modern people, I will call it a smart camera because it is portable and it's just one click, you get the picture instantly. Before this new technology, you know, maybe I guess a lot of you know that people need to sit in there for 10 or 15 minutes. You cannot move. Otherwise, the cameraman cannot get a clear picture from you. So you need enough patience. But this new technologies, they make the picture taking instant. And this immediately gave birth to privacy concern. And a lot of people, they published a paper in newspapers and discussed this, whether we should allow this new technologies to be used on the streets. So this is very interesting, you see. New technologies always give us concerns on privacy. And when we realized this case 5 years ago, I did a literature survey. I really want to trace back to the time how law people, legal experts, they define what is privacy. And I found this very old reference. It's from a Harvard Law Review published in 1819. So it's more than 100 years ago. They said that the individual shall have full protection in person and in property is a principle as old as the common law. And it has been found necessary from time to time to define anew. So you see, the legal person, they are not stupid. They are also very smart. They know the privacy, the context of privacy, the implication of privacy. They can be updated. They can be annulled. The exact nature and extent of protection. So keep some key points in your mind. Privacy is a dynamic concept. It's always kept in concern since very old time. And new technologies keep bringing challenges to privacy concerns. And while helping defining new extent of privacy. Suppose of the social media or smart devices. 20 years ago, people they did not use it. And I guess at that time, if you compare the mindset, what is privacy, they could be quite different from modern young people. And we have a lot of examples how privacy can be leaked, like this case. From each app or smartphone. Smartphone is an open platform, as you know, just like your PC. It's open to external network, to internet, and it's very easy to get your personal data leaked. And the public surveillance, not only limited to the security cameras, but also the online governmental surveillance program. We know the story of Edward Snowden, right? And the PRISM project in US, also in China, people have this great firewall to make the whole internet in China as just like a very huge local network. Also, you have founded a similar project in Germany and other big countries. I don't know if we have this program in Norway to be investigated. Other privacy concerns like, data leakage. I mentioned this Anthem, the American insurance company data leakage incidents in the first lecture. And in the past few years, we can see this is actually not making news anymore. Every month, we heard some news like data breach, data leakage, and a lot of huge companies, famous industries, they suffered from it, like eBay, Sony, Home Depot, Adobe, Apple, JP Morgan, even Yahoo, they suffered at least once such data breach incidents. Even in 2013, the Danish civil registry were hacked. And this is a data breach from a governmental sect. And also nowadays people use smartphone and interesting, in China we call it a group of people, we call it with a name. I don't know if you have similar term to describe such people. We call the cutting hand party. So that means the nowadays people, they cannot be separated with their smartphones and smart devices. Every 5 minutes, they want to reach the hand to your phone. Otherwise, we will be in high anxiety level. And they really need some people to cut their hand. So we call it the cut hand. And the smartphones, smart devices, they always stay with you, interact with you. You leave all your traces, and including geometric locations. So a lot of privacy concerns, biometrics, as we mentioned. Before we conclude the first hour, I want to challenge you with one question, several questions, actually. That will help you to understand the complexity in the concept of privacy. Suppose you have an option to use biometric payments for shopping in a supermarket or a shop. The first question, would you like to use your face or fingerprint? So you have these two options offered by the supermarket. To register the program if the biometric sensor is provided by the supermarket. So that means the data is stored in the supermarket server. In this case, would you like face or fingerprint to register with the consumer program? Yes, the assumption is you like this payment means and you like to choose one. And you will have this break to think about this. And the second question, would you use, very similar, use your face or fingerprint to register program if the biometric sensor is owned by you? For example, the fingerprint sensors embedded in your smartphone. And in that case, the data is always under your control. Okay, another more challenging case for you. Suppose you are required to use biometric payment for shopping illegal things in your darknet. Just suppose, I'm not really mean it. Would you use your face or fingerprint? Okay, we have a break. And think about that. Okay, we continue to the second half of this lecture. Any idea, any answer to these three questions? For all cases. Mm-hmm. Convenient. Face is not convenient? Okay. Okay, I understand your point. So you think the fingerprints, they might not be easy to link to you, right? If it was leaked. Could be reasonable. Any other people have any other opinion about this? Or you don't have opinion?
I would use fake and fingerprints on the next
one. Okay. Face in the shop. Why? Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So face, they have more exposure to outside world, and the fingerprints, they are limited to in access. So basically, you have the same argument, but no, the same fact or understand your fact, but a different perspective of opinion about this. So both of you think face they are more accessible to outside and the fingerprint is limited access, but you have completely different opinion. Okay. Okay, this is interesting. You think face is more sensitive in privacy? You want to give them higher protection or? Okay. Can recognize you. Okay, interesting. Yes. Okay, I see. But if I'm the vendor of the market, I don't need your name actually.
Exactly.
Right. Just picture of. Okay. Interesting attacking. Reasonable, I think. So in this case, we prefer fingerprint because it's not easy to copy and not easy to transfer, not easy to change, right? Yeah. Okay. Okay, you have 10 options. So if one of them is leaked, you can change to another. This is also interesting point. Any other one want to join this discussion, give your opinion? Or? Is it too fake? Okay. You think face is harder to fake or? Okay. Okay. So you might not choose either of them, right? Okay. Yeah. Correct. And better ways, we do not use darknet. Maybe we can have a vote. How many people you want to use face on this case, sharp sensor? You can raise your hand. Okay. 13. And this case, fingerprint. Wow. This case. Wow, too many. I think too many. I won't count. We don't have enough time. In this case, just assume you want to use this service, and you have to choose one of them. Okay, one. And okay, too many. Actually, you state different reasons, the arguments. I think we don't have standard answers. This case, this example is to tell you different people, they have a different understanding what is the privacy and what type of privacy is more important for this person, right? And you may have quite different opinions. Even you have basically understand the same fact. Some people prefer they concern more about the exposure, whether my face can be recognized by another person. Some people, they have more concern about their fingerprint because they think a fingerprint is more secret than others. And so it's really hard to give a uniform the answer or standard answer. But we can summarize the characteristics of these two modality. Think about that. Face, yes, as we mentioned by you, it has higher exposure degree, easy to capture and search. It has more links to other identities of you, for example, your name or other. A lot of people may have already found your face corresponding to your name on Facebook or other social media. And possibly, but the other ways, I didn't think any people of you proposed this. I think it is, if the picture is lower in quality, sometimes two persons, they could look alike. And the fingerprint, exactly the other way. They have low exposure, hard to capture and search, less links to other identities of you, less possible to find a match with another person, so it is more unique. Different people, they have different concerns of different aspects. You ask my opinion, right? Difficult. I might have this opinion today or change my mind tomorrow, to be honest. For example, in this case, I would prefer fingerprint. I think I agree with most of you. And in this case, I think I may prefer face because I don't trust my smartphone or tablet too much. To me, it is dangerous. And in this case, I will not give an answer. So we may have this understanding, for example, when connecting to the identities is more concern of your concern, fingerprint may be preferred, or the otherwise face. But this is not standard answer, just one understanding. So you see, it's very complicated to understand what is privacy. Different people, they have different opinion, different perspective. And you already have attributed a lot of your own opinion. And let's look at a very typical case. Every people know you have e-passport, right? Yes, nowadays if you get a passport, freshly issued one, it must be e-passport here in Norway. E-passport means you have always a chip embedded there. And anyone know what is stored in the chip? No people knows. So it is secret, kept very well to public, right? Actually, no, it is actually you can access the content or the knowledge what is stored in the chip. It is not secret. It is available from the ECAL standard. It is public literature. Every people can access, available in internet. It is, any people know ECAL? Not so many. International Civil Aviation Organization. So basically all the e-passport on this planet worldwide, if you want to use your e-passport for travel purpose, you have to conform to this ECAL standard. So you see different type passport from different countries on this planet, but they are almost the same in data types on the format, because all of them conform to ECAL standard. And what is on the chip? And basically it is everything you can see from the hard copy, the information on the hard copy in the information page, and other pages, they are the information stored in the same time in the chip. But besides that, also in the chip, they stored some other things. For example, in this case, why I use this case to show you, for example, the face data, the digital face, the front face picture is stored in the chip, which can be actually read by almost all chip readers, NFC based. So it is basically not that confidential if you have a reader, NFC reader, and get close enough to the passport. But the another part, for example, the fingerprint part, is better protected in this case and can only be read by another protocol they call the extended access control. And this extended access control, they really require the reader is trusted. So there's a mutual authentication between the passport and the reader. So in this case, ECAL, obviously they think fingerprint is more sensitive in terms of privacy. And it is not hard to understand, because here the fingerprint is used to uniquely identify who is this person. So they need a higher level of protection in this case. Another word, I believe a lot of you though they know this, or at least heard a lot of this for many times, that is anonymization, or say we anonymize a set of data. So if we say so, what do you mean? For example, here we have a data sheet. Just example, if many years ago we have some EU project running here, and we invited the students that was year 2008. And we invite the Hoige students and the employees to contribute their fingerprint samples for our for research purpose. We will develop some fingerprint evaluation, fingerprint recognition, and the privacy enhancing technologies based on this data set. And we have some table like this. Name. In my case, I was one of them as well. My email. And that time I was 31. So we have some data contributed here. So this is our typical data sheet to record all the fingerprint or biometric data in our research projects. And we have some agreement with NSD. Any people know this? What is NSD? I'll try to find it for you. And people know that? No. Okay. So yes. So it is a Norwegian Center for Research Data Management. And basically, we call it Norwegian DPA for Research Data, Data Protection Agency. So before we collect the data from students and employees, we need to establish agreement with them. And they specify the policies, the security policies. And one of the policy they listed there is we need to do this anonymization after we complete the whole project. That means, what does that mean? If you are required to do anonymization of your data sheet.
Blur the face.
In this case, we don't have face, we have fingerprint. So blur the fingerprint samples, right? Any other answers? So you all think we should blur the samples, right? Yes, but how to understand should be anonymized. Delete it or encrypted or okay.
Separately.
So it could be option to store them separately or delete it or encrypt it, right? The standard answer is yes, you are partially right. So the standard answer is to remove this part, this information from the fingerprint samples. Remove, how to remove? It could be data separation. We separate this part and store it in another place, right? Or as you mentioned, encrypt it, or directly just remove it without any storage of this information in other places. The only thing is there's no clear specification of how to anonymize this data from the NSD side. So for a lot of people, they think maybe we can just remove this part. This is easier to do. Right? Yes, this is, I would say this is a type of way to anonymize this data sheet. We just leave this fingerprint sample part and then we give a index to different subjects. So from the index, you cannot know who owns this data, who is the subject. And this, you can see, this is also specified, or say de-identify. De-identify is the same meaning as anonymize. This is from the Norwegian law. Personal health data filing system and the processing of personal health data. Just one example here. And we also find another requirement of privacy. That is the right of access. That is specified by the Personal Data Act in Norway. So they say any people who so request shall be informed of kind of processing of personal data a controller is performing. So data controller is the party to control your data and taking care of your data, either to process it or outsource it to another trusted party. They should take the responsibility to answer the question from the data subject. What are you doing with my data? They should give a standard answer to them. So you see, this is another dimension of privacy. That is for Privacy also means for the user, end user, data subject, they have a right to access their own data in a system. And as I mentioned, we have this real case, a real story I want to tell you. This EU project, we were collecting some data. You can see me there. You may also recognize Patrick Booth. He's a professor here in this lab as well. And Christoph, the second person from the left, our group leader in the biometric lab. And we collected data from 100 person, and each person contributed 10 prints. And we used 6 sensors, and take every person subject 12 sessions to contribute the data. And we were required by ISD to anonymize all the data. So the quickest way, just delete the name list and other metadata. And should we do this? And the story is, after the project finished at February, 3 years after, we helped one subject popped up and knocked on my door, say, can you delete my data from your database? Because I know you have agreement with the NSD and the project now finished. I want my data completely deleted. I can't do that. If I look under the table, which data is from you? We don't know. So you see the conflict of the two aspects of privacy, right? One aspect is confidentiality, unlinkability. It can be realized by data anonymization. The other aspect is the data subject have the right to access their data in any case, in any time. And sometimes they are conflict to each other. And fortunately, actually, we didn't really delete everything. As you mentioned, we separated the two tables. We stored the other part in another machine physically. They are really different machines and locked in the lab without the connection to the internet. In that way, we actually found the index, the name, and then his data. A better way, what could be a better way? In addition to data separation, we mentioned this. That is, we called, could be the way we use pseudo Pseudonymization. And actually, as you mentioned, that is the case we can, or I don't remember, okay. We can use, for example, the encryption, right? We can encrypt this part. We call it identities and metadata. We can encrypted to some binary strings. Or encryption is an option. Another option is a hash. Hash is even nicer because it is fixed in length and very concise in size. So we can generate a hash from these identities and store it in a separate way. So next time if some people pumps up, can you delete my data? Then I will request what is your name, what is your age, what is gender, and other metadata, and then I generate a hash, right? I found this hash in this table linked to his fingerprint or other biometric data. So this way of hashing or encryption, that is a method to realize, to implement pseudonymization. That means we change the identity with a, or replace the original plain text identity with something that is not easily to understand to outsiders. And do not think access, this privacy right to access your old data is easy to get. It is not always something that can be taken for granted. And I believe some of you know this case. Max Schremer, is a Austrian privacy activist. At that time, actually, he was a student. He had a lawsuit with Facebook to get all his activities on his Facebook account, all his personal data back. And after back and forth discussions and fighting, and Facebook finally sent one CD to him containing more than 1,000 pages of documents. So the cost is very high in this case. It cost him a lot of time and a lawsuit to get his data back. Why this happened? Because privacy laws across different countries, they have different regulations. They have different specifications. So one privacy protection law in one country may not be extended easily to another country in this case. And some people know this very famous case of safe harbor, right, between European Union and the US. Before end of last year, safe harbor was working very well. So its purpose is to allow the big companies like Google, Microsoft, or cloud-based service providers like Amazon, they can collect European citizens' data and transfer it to US for processing. So the legal ground is the safe harbor. But this was invalidated end of last year by the European court, because suddenly the expert there, they think this is against our European data protection, privacy protection regulation. And not only across the borders, across the area, it could be also happened in cross borders inside the European Union. For example, this case, Facebook, they provide services to all the European countries. Yeah, if I'm not wrong. However, the legal grounds, what is the legal ground? How they can collect the customers' data? What is the legal ground? They actually use the law from Ireland, and they extend this Irish law principle to other different member states. And this caused a lot to Facebook, actually. May last year, Belgian court, they gave a fine to Facebook. So it is €250,000 per day until they correct this. So the key challenge is they shouldn't just rely on one member state's law. They should conform to the law, privacy law in different member states. You can see this is really a challenge for Facebook as well. But fortunately, from the April this year, the European member states, they reached to a uniformed law, which is going to enter into application from May in 2 years. So it will be replaced the data protection directive. So before we have directive, it is not a regulation. Directive means it is just something like a security policy. And based on this directive, each member state will generate their local country national law, like the Personal Data Act in Norway. And now it is really a regulation. It is a basic law for all the member states in EU. And it is mandatory for all the member states. It could be also easier for the American companies because they are now just dealing with this one law. Some concept of ethics. After the concept of privacy, we talk about ethics. So it is a set of professional associations and certification agencies. They work together to establish codes of ethics. It can prescribe ethical conduct. to require their employees to respect them, or the information society or community to respect them, but they do not always have ability to bind the violators. It is not a regulation. And here in textbook, you can find a list of this computer scientist ethics. Difference. You can also find difference from across cultures. This is also why we see information security. One of the aspects is the culture aspects. For example, in the textbook, we found some good examples. The first example is, I think in most of the West countries, including Norway, the software license infringement is a serious problem, and people are educated that you should respect the software rights, the copyrights, the intelligence rights of the inventors or the authors. But this is actually not that really that case in, for example, in East Asia countries. And people think this is not that serious, and we may use some pirate software, and because this does not really hurt other people. So you see this culture difference in this case. On the other case, the textbook also mentioned another example, that is a misuse of corporate resource. And actually, I was educated while I was young in China, say, you should keep clear, this is public things, this is private things, you should not use too much public resources, otherwise people doing that will be indicted with corruption. Of course, there were in practice a lot of people doing that, but people are trained or educated that you should keep a clear line. And statistics from our textbook, they say, in Western countries, this is for a lot of organizations, this is just minor things. They allow their employees to use the corporate resources to some degree, and this is regarded as understandable. So you see this difference in culture on this specific case as well. Different laws. I think I will not go to details. You can get much, much more details from our textbook, or even you use Google, you find a list of laws in US, like privacy laws. And also, especially for the healthcare domain, you may heard about the HIPAA and HITECH. So both of these laws in U.S., they are used to regulate the healthcare organizations, how they should deal with the customers, especially the patient data. And one thing I want to remind you is the HITECH and also the HIPAA updated version in 2013. They extended the liability of security risk breach from healthcare organizations to associated partners, for example, the IT service providers, legal firms. So in the future, if you are going to deliver your IT services to an American customer who involves in dealing with patient data, you should be very careful. Because if there is some leakage, security leakage, you are also liable in some cases. This is regulated by HIPAA and HITECH. And one exception, that is a common carrier. For example, internet service providers. They just provide internet communication service. They are not liable in this case. Other laws, I will not go to details, like theft, identity theft, for export and espionage, copyright laws, on the financial report laws. And also you can Google this Enron scandal, which is very famous. It restructured the financial sector in US to make the whole system more accountable, more transparent, and also the third point, separation of accounting and auditing, which is very, very important. You cannot expect the same company, they provide service of accounting in the same time they provide service auditing, which is very conflictive to each other in interest. The DMCA used to protect the intelligent rights. It has now been extended or say adopted by a lot of countries. We really regard it as a international law now. And the European Council Cybercrime Convention, the GDPR, I mentioned this. And also I post one news and a comment on Facebook group. It is about the GDPR, because in the following 2 years, you will be assured a lot of IT service providers, they need to rethink how they can technically and from the perspective of security policy to conform to the new general data protection regulation in the European scope. It will completely change the picture here, because it changed a lot and now mandatory to each member states. Okay, I think we'll just conclude the lecture here, and if you have time, and really encourage you to go through the Norwegian laws. We have a lot of slides here to know more about the insight here, what happened here in Norway, and you can compare the situation in Norway in the legal perspective and ethical perspective with other countries, US, Eastern Asia countries, or other countries. So, any questions before we conclude the lecture? Okay, then see you next week. And do remember the cutoff time for the homework last week is midnight, 12 o'clock tonight. And after that, we're going to consider for you for the free lunch.